I think the first thing Amen. I want to do is give us a chance to introduce ourselves. Jason, why don't you introduce yourself, Jeff, and then I'll go.
Hi, guys. My name is Jason Graves. I'm a pastor of a church in Carlsbad, California, which is North San Diego County. And been married for 29 years, pastoring for 25, the same church for the last 20. And also, our church is highly focused on reaching men and discipling men. We have a ministry called Anchored Man Ministry, where we help guys get connected to God and connected to one another.
My name is Jeff Hamilton. I pastor Hills Church in Laguna Niguel, California. I'm just actually about 30 minutes north of Jason, but we don't let those San Diego people come up into my neck of the woods.
We call that the Orange Curtain. We don't cross the Orange Curtain up to Orange County.
Actually, Jason and I have been friends for, seems like most of our lives. Our kids have grown up together. And we started having these kind of conversations about discipling men, really with discipling the three men that God gave to us, his two sons, my son Justin. And in that process, been pastoring 25 years. One of the advantages, though, of I don't pastor a large church like Jason or Keith, probably much like many of the size of churches that y'all serve here. And so that has also given me the opportunity to chase a lot of other opportunities. So I've been an assistant varsity boys athletics coach at a Christian high school in my area. We get to produce some pretty high-level athletes, but I talk with all the coaches about how they use sports as a discipleship tool in our program, especially for shaping young men that I'm involved with, basketball, baseball, football. And I've had a 10-year side project that is called Dad Academy that I believe that men are most successful in life when they have know what's expected and have a plan to accomplish it. And so we try to build some confidence and some intentionality around fatherhood. But between us leaders, it's really just an excuse to get guys in a room talking about their issues together. And so grateful for this opportunity to share this with you.
Thanks, guys. My name is Keith Jenkins. I pastor in Portland, Oregon, outside of Portland, a city called Gresham. I've been married 37 years, got three kids, adults, three grandchildren. I know I don't look like it because black don't crack, but that's okay. I was in the Marine Corps for 10 years. Hurrah. If you're in the room, if you're not a part of the Marine Corps, then we like you anyway. Anyway, but I think for me, you know, raising a son, and then having not had a father growing up myself. My father was my father was a two-tour Vietnam veteran, came home in the 70s. Nobody knew as much as we know now about PTSD and trauma and that type of thing. All I knew is he was erratic and he wasn't safe to be around when I was a little boy. You know, doing the typical things that boys do could set him off. Making noises unexpectedly could set him off. This PTSD was really severe. He beat my mother, beat me, and so she divorced him. And so it was a journey for me to manhood to try to figure out the pathway to manhood and what it was. And so I grew up in Baltimore on the streets, pretty much East Baltimore. If you know anything about the HBO series The Wire, that is art imitating life. Those scenes in that movie, I can verify, were exactly, they got, whoever was the set consultant for that got it completely right. And so for me, it's been a journey. The Marine Corps is a part of that journey, obviously mentors and coaches and people a journey. But here's what always has frustrated me as a pastor, and I'll just tell you right out of the gate, here's what frustrates me. You get 50, 100, 200 women in a room, and within 30 minutes, they're painting each other's toes and telling each other their deepest secrets. Isn't that right? Every time you've scheduled or tried to produce a men's event of some sort, like a men's retreat, let's take that for instance, you're not going to tell me that it didn't take you to almost Saturday night at around the fire, after all of the hours, after all of the conversation, to finally get guys to now confess sin and start really pressing in. It's always been the challenge, and I would say it is a warfare that we have to engage in. because we're going to, right now, I want to get into some of the statistics around men and let them chime in from their own perspectives. But I think all of us have seen enough of the statistics to know that when a man gets turned on for the gospel, everything attached to him changes and is transformed.
Yeah, yeah.
That we know. So then tell me, how come we have not made men's ministry a number one priority in our churches?
Hey, I just jumping off of that with Keith, I'm going to steal some of Jay's thunder. Uh-oh. We were having dinner probably 15 years ago. He was telling me about his Anchored Man project. We were talking about men's ministry, and he just told me, like, Jeff, I think one of the things that we have wrong is that churches don't need a men's ministry. We need a men's strategy. Right, Jay? I mean, it's probably a tool that he uses all the time in his conversations. And that has stuck with me and has rechanged the way that I think about doing men's ministry.
Go for it, Jay. Chime in.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just semantics. Oftentimes, men's ministries segregate out the guys from the life of the church. You know, their own groups, their own events, their own whatever. And there's nothing wrong with that because events are actually really helpful and groups can be. But we try to see them as an on-road, as part of a strategy to get guys plugged into the other areas serving and leading in the church. Men's ministry historically tends to kind of gather the pancake breakfast guys on a Saturday morning who are already convinced about church and the Lord oftentimes. I mean, they're just as messed up as the rest of us, but they kind of know how to find something in the Bible. They know how to pray out loud, all those. So we really try to encourage churches to focus a strategy on reaching maybe more of the fringe guys who are already at the church, but they've never gone to a small group. They've never prayed out loud. They probably don't know how to read the Bible on their own or haven't done that. And so our strategy is to kind of start with that fringe guy and eventually get them into integrated into leading in the church and serving in the church.
I want to dive in a little bit, and I want both of you to chime in as you feel led. There's some cultural shifts and dynamics that have increasingly made men's ministry, I think, more of a challenge in the culture right now. I'd love for both of you to speak to some of the cultural shifts and dynamics. We know secularism, individualism, we can hit on those. But what are the things that for us, I think understanding the problem and the challenge first is important, because then it will help you in your context begin to design strategies that actually meet and hit the target more than anything else.
Jay, go ahead, bud.
Hey, by the way, we've never done this before. I don't know that this has been done in Foursquare. I have somebody remotely in, so we've never done this, so be patient with us as we figure the rhythm out. Go for it, Jay.
Yeah, I consider myself a missionary to the men in my local culture. And so that means I know what hobbies they love. I know what the number one sport in our area is, golf. And then right behind that is surfing. And we kind of know those things and make sure that the entirety of our church aims for what the guys are like in our community, which is going to be very different, Keith, than your neighborhood. And in some ways, even slightly different than Jeff's, though he's just right up the road. So we start by aiming for men. Everything we do in the church, every time whoever's speaking, we don't bash guys from the front or make, you know, Father's Day is not the opportunity to tell everybody what a bad dad they are. It's our opportunity to encourage men and make showing up at church a place where they feel incredibly thought about and respected and honored, even if they're not quite living the kind of life yet that honors God.
Just like you heard from Jason, you know, all these statistics that are out, it's amazing that we have such amazing data. One of the things that says is that when we talk about people groups in the U.S., there's a thought that men are the most unreached people group in the U.S. And that even out of all of the men, there's an estimated something like 30 million men that attend church in the U.S., and 20 million of them are not discipled. Right, there is no ongoing process, and like many of us, one of the things that was interesting about coaching at a Christian, quote unquote, Christian high school is that half of our parents, while they might be God-fearers, are not Christ followers, right? And so the majority of them pass off the discipleship of their children to the school, and they're not actively engaged in spiritual development or even interest in themselves. And so trying to connect with the men in our area is such a significant part. Like you just heard Jason talk about, he knows what is the number one factors in his community. What are the interests? Starting with just the most basic of information will allow us to help to develop some insight into how God is going to ask us to reach, like Jason said, the guys on the periphery that are just kind of orbiting around, and to find a way to engage them in the process of actual authentic Christ following.
Well, I'll just tell you right out of the gate, I hate men's breakfasts, pancakes, and all of that junk. I think it's a waste of time. But I think what Jason just said, I don't think it's a waste of time. Let me stop. I'm being overly dramatic in that regard. But here's what I say about what Jason said that I think is the number one key for you moving forward is if you begin to think about your men and men's ministry as from a missionary standpoint.
Yes.
So listen to what he said. I know their hobbies. I know the places they go to eat. All those kind of things in your community. What do men do? I'm in Oregon. Men shoot, men fish, men hunt, men hike. That's what we do. So as a black guy, imagine me coming up there. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I was an infantry Marine, so they don't think I know about being outdoors. And I was a marksmanship instructor, which means I can solve whatever problem you start in this zip code in another one. Do you understand what I'm saying? So this idea of men, like what they do in Orange County. Like, I go to Orange County, I go down there, and I see all of the men on surfboards in the morning. I see them on bikes running down the coast when I go to minister for Jason. And I see where all of the men are in their community. Where are they in your community? What do they do? What is the language they speak? There's a language, there's a glossary that's used. Every in-group has it. If you were in the military, you start talking 5 minutes, I know what branch of the service you're in. Law enforcement, in-groups. There's language, there's cues, there's social cues within there that you need to pick up on and then address them from that standpoint. And here's the other thing I think Jason and those guys, Jason does a really good job of this, is don't go after the church nerds. They're already in. They already know when the small group meets. They already do all that stuff. You're going to have to get outside that box and really get into the missionary mindset that says, what would I do to introduce the gospel to the men in my community? What would be the first step? They don't come to your church, by the way. So how do you go to get them? And then, or how do you then attract them? And I'll tell you, Jason, the Fire Fest is a whole different thing. Let me just say, because there's axe throwing, there's fires, there's gorillas. I mean, that's a men's ministry. I literally went to his men's event, and they had a 60-foot gorilla above the stage, like outside. It was ridiculous. But it was the best men thought through. Men, it was for men, designed by men. You could tell 100%. So,
one of the reasons why it's important to understand the interests, I think, of the men in our communities is because as guys, right, we're wired for affirmation, right? We're wired for respect. And your interests become part of your identity. And when your identity is formed and connected to these activities, how many of us guys know that, you know, in Jason's situation, right, we're talking about who shapes your surfboard or what kind of clubs you're hitting. Other communities, it's going to be like what kind of boat that you have or how much time you're spending at the river. Because we start to find that when our identity is no longer connected to a purpose, then we look for a group to be able to find acceptance, affirmation, and those interests become our identity. And yet the process is to help men be able to move from however they've self-defined to the definition that Christ has defined of what it is to be a follower of his.
Hey, Jay, can you speak to some environmental barriers that we have that prevent men from really entering in? Like, the way the environment is even set up is a barrier.
Yeah. I think I always start with who's leading, like, what's the team you want to put together to lead? We call it our men's strategy. And we really, I think when you're talking about designing, whether you're creating an environment for an event or you're talking about just the church on a Sunday, is try to gather a handful of guys, if you don't have a men's ministry yet, a handful of guys who are newer to church. And usually the guys stepping up saying they want to run your men's ministry are the guys you don't really want to be the face of it, because they tended to look in like inward and just, you know, let's do the pancake breakfast on Saturday and we're going to talk about pornography. It's like, well, all the guys you're trying to reach are trying to hide pornography. And in our community, a lot of them work on Saturdays or they have a sport on a hobby on Saturday. So trying to environment time slots, but it's really getting a band of brothers together, even if it starts small. They're the kind of guys you think other guys in your community would want to like hang out with and be with. Jeff, you talked about identity and community. We organically in the last year and a half started using the phrase a band of brothers, a brotherhood, because we recognize guys are looking for that. They're looking for a place where they can fit in. And so those are the guys that help shape our environments. If you ask somebody who's new, what does it feel like walking into church on a Sunday? Is it all women on the stage, you know, leading worship? Do you have any godly dudes up there leading worship? Who's greeting at the door? Are the songs thought through in a way that guys can sing them and feel? There's a really good book, without trying to go into too much detail. It's an older book called Why Men Hate Going to Church.
Yep.
And it's a really great read, even though it's a little bit outdated. It's, I think it's probably almost 20 years old. It'll give you the concepts that really help shape for us too, is like why men hate going to church. It's a really good resource to start maybe looking through your church through the lens of, are we aiming for the kind of men that we want to reach?
I love the idea of brotherhood that Jason was just talking about. In our small, when I'm dealing with young men in athletics, that we often want to use in sports terms or even church languages about family, right? But how many men come from a jacked up family situation, right? So that is an unhealthy environment. I can't trust my dad. I've not been able to be dependent on other people. And when we were trying to create environments, both at my church and in our coaching cultures, we use the term brotherhood as well. And it really comes from Proverbs 17:17, right? A friend loves at all times, and what? Oh, come on, y'all. You got to get this in your spirit. A brother is born for adversity. Now, how many of us know, like, we don't get to talk about this much outside this room, but being a dude is hard, right? I think that's one of the reasons why now we see generations of men that want to prolong their adolescence and are unwilling to embrace responsibility, to reject passivity, right, to lead courageously, and to expect a greater reward, because we don't know. You got to have some guys that got your back. Best example of men's ministry happened just an hour before Keith came in. First time we've been able to kind of touch base on, hey, what are we going to do here, right? We shared some notes. And a dude called him. And he goes, Jeff, I got to take this. And at that moment, this brother thought that it was important enough that I got to reach out to somebody in this hard thing that I'm going through. Keith said, give me a second. I got to at least got to pray with him, touch base with him. I love you. God's got this. We're going to pray this thing together. And now guess what's going to happen? That guy's going to keep going to that well and start to become that for other people. When we create those kind of relate, that's why military has such incredible bonds. That's why the things that you love, the men you love the most, are the ones who've been with you through the hard times. Brotherhood, this concept is really, really significant.
So let's deconstruct. Let's go back to what Jason said. Let's get to rethinking church through a male lens. Okay, so start from the environment, start to the worship curriculum, like go through everything from a man's lens. And here's what I tell you. A lot of our worship curriculum is not men sensitive at all. Because remember the song, He Loves Me, oh, remember that? How about the lyric giving Jesus a big sloppy wet kiss? No man's doing that. And no man is singing that. And you got to really look at even worship from that standpoint. It's like, what are we singing? Like, when's the last time you as the pastor went through and looked at your songs in the lyrics, the worship curriculum of your church, and said, is this even missional? Can our people really engage? Do they even understand what they're saying? Much less for the men, right? So think about the environments of the churches that we came. Some of you are my age, so I'm 58. Remember the churches? They had all these floral arrangements all over the sanctuary and the stage. And it looked good, but not for a man. And then I went to a church, and the guy had a Harley Davidson in the lobby. And guess where all of the guys were? Justice Coleman does this thing sometime on Father's Day. They got arm wrestling. They give away big packs of beef and bacon and all this stuff. And how many guys you know to go to church want some meat to smoke, bacon? Come on, this. And by the way, we aren't that complicated, guys. I see a couple of ladies in the room, but we aren't that complicated, bro. Like, put it together. If you put some meat out, have some fun, we're going to come.
Hey, New Hope Hilo, Sheldon Lashina, they decided that, you know, everybody does Mother's Day. Everybody does something special. He goes, in his community there on the islands, the issue of fatherhood is a challenging one. Yep. And so they decided we're going to make our biggest outreach Sunday is Father's Day. They got food trucks everywhere. They got all kinds of games because they want to train the men in their community that the best place that they can be and the place where they can have the most fun, safe with their family is at church. It's now the second largest attended Sunday next to Easter in their whole.
Like, again, Jason, I want you to speak to this because there's three things that I think have to be involved in men's ministry. We put this in the notes: challenge, adventure, and significance. And you could hit and key on any one of those, but that idea of challenge, adventure, and finding significance, meaning for a man, is huge. You speak to that, Jay.
Yeah, most people underestimate what it takes to get men to any other event from a church service. The first stop for most men is going to be a church service. They're not going to go to a camp out. Most of them, they're not going to go to your men's group or your men's meeting. They're going to start with church. And so Sunday for us is really the target place. When you talk about Father's Day, we make a huge deal out of Father's Day. And we're also really careful to never put men down. We don't use the language man up, step up, blah, 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 because that's just like a dad or a coach who's being negative toward them. So on Father's Day, we'll say, hey, can we have all the guys stand up? And then we'll just, ladies, can we cheer for them? Look at these studs. And then I'll personally say from the front something like this: guys, you could have been anywhere today on Father's Day, but you chose to come to church. And that says a lot about the kind of man you are and the kind of man you want to be. Just that kind of language, really trying to encourage them so that it reinforces coming to church is a good idea as a guy. Yep. And that goes deeper than the bacon. The bacon's great. We do all that kind of fun stuff too. Yep. But just making sure that, you know, the Father's Day sermon is never three ways to finally, you know, quit porn or three ways to finally stop screwing your family up.
Yeah,
it's always more of like an encouraging kind of thing.
And I think pastors sometimes don't get it or become frustrated. I had a pastor tell me I was coming to do a men's conference for him. And he's like, man, I'm so glad you're coming, Keith. You're a Marine. You're going to kick my men in the tail. And I'm like, your guys don't need a kick in the tail, bro. They probably need a hug.
Yeah.
Like, they probably need a hug. They don't need a kick in the tail. Yeah. How many of you guys know, by the way, sitting in this room is every struggle and every trauma and every issue that every man has in his life? Why wouldn't we create gracious, kind, loving, comforting, encouraging environments to men? You're not going to get men to want to come back when they're getting beat upside the head and told what they can't do and what they're not doing. Sometimes they're getting that at home. Sometimes they're getting that at work. Why come to church to get a beat down?
It just adds to, I know that maybe this is a little bit later, but in Orange County, where I live, a pretty high economic environment, the number two killer of men between 35 and 65 is suicide. What begins to happen is, I forget which poet or writer used to say that men, most men live lives of quiet desperation, right? And that there is a haunting feeling with many men that, like, I just didn't measure up. right? I didn't either meet my dad's expectation. I'm not meeting my wife's expectation. Maybe my career didn't go the way that it wanted to. And there is this impending sense that says that we can never do anything right. And yet as men, we're like, we're Pavlov's dogs, right? Ring the bell, feed the dog. Ring the bell, feed the dog. Are the ladies in here?
Yes, we got a couple. They are.
Okay, sorry.
Careful.
Okay. Careful, careful. I've been waiting for one of y'all to slip up because there they are. I see them. They slipped in, but I see them.
Yeah. I got wives that, you know, and when my wife and I are doing marriage ceremony, marriage retreats, they say all the time, you know, I'm so tired of nagging my husband. I go, then you probably need to start rewarding him more.
Yeah, yeah.
Because when he starts getting some reward for doing the things that you're expecting him to do, what do you think he's going to do? You know, he gets a big old hug and a kiss for taking out the trash. He's going to start seeing that the trash is a little bit more full, right? The opportunities. And you can extrapolate that out, gentlemen, a little bit longer if you want.
Yeah.
It's and so, like Jason said, like most men, we live with this challenge, this internal challenge, and it's the world's system that says, your value is based in what you produce, right? Your worth is based in what you do. Mm-hmm. And so if what I'm doing is not meeting people's expectations, and we need to change that conversation. In our coaching, and I do this with the men in our church, I got young men, and how many times would a football coach stop a practice to tell a kid exactly what he did wrong in front of the whole team? And that motivation says, well, I don't want to make that mistake. But the kids continue to make that mistake because out of fear, they don't want to be seen. Now, all of a sudden, they just want to disappear.
Yeah.
When do we stop practice once and go, you know what? Nobody's ever going to notice that your footwork was exactly right, that your hands were exactly where they needed to be. And that's the kind of execution and attention to detail that creates success for our team. Now, what's going to happen for all the other players? They're going to want to do that.
Let me speak to ladies. Thank you for being in the room. First of all, we have a ton of lady pastors. We got ladies that are raising children, grandchildren. Yes. So thank you for being in the room. You are not a burden to us at all. So I just want you to know that. It is a surprise because we would talk different if you weren't here, just so you know.
Yeah.
We would. There'd probably be some smells on your row and all that stuff. But we're not doing any of that because you're here.
My wife, Jamie's glad that you're here.
And so my wife made sure that if a lady was here, that I made mention of the fact that we need you. And we need you. Some of you are leading congregations that need these strategies and the languaging to help you. And so, Jason, can you speak to this concept? Because we talked about it briefly, but I think I want to come back to it. This idea of brotherhood, camaraderie among our men. Can you speak to how powerful that is, how necessary? That whole Proverbs 20:17, iron sharpening iron, two are better than one, we fight together, we live together. Can you speak to some of that?
Yeah, right before I jump into that, I just want to say one thing about what Jeff, you touched on, the discouragement, that not beating these guys down. You should know like the top three or four hobbies and interests of the guys in your community, and then you should also know the top two or three struggles that the men in your community, Jeff, you and I, it would probably be affording a home, dual income families, hidden addictions, right? And finding out, because if you speak to those, if you combine like rewarding them with things they like when they come to church or to a men's event, but you're also speaking to their fears, to their quiet desperations, you will not have a hard time gathering guys. And the band of brotherhood concept that's really exciting, regardless of the size of your church or the budget of your church. We started our men's ministry by just me looking for guys in our church that I thought I would want to hang out with and other guys from our community would want to hang out with, which means I had to overlook some of the guys that really wanted to run the men's ministry. And that was not easy. But what I wanted to create was this group of guys that other guys want to be like, I want to be in. I want to hang out. And so all of our strategies revolve around getting guys connected to some other men and encouraging them. It's a safe place here. Always explaining things. Like instead of going, hey, guys, get in a group of three and pray for each other. No, the guys, hopefully, if you're reaching their guys, they're terrified of praying out loud. They don't pray out loud, except for like a burger, you know, before their meal at best. So taking them from like where they are, not where we expect them to be in church. So we just call things out like, hey, some of you have never read a chapter of the Bible before, and we're going to teach you how to life journal. Some of you have never prayed out loud or been in a circle. And oftentimes, even quelling their fears, we use this example a lot, like on Easter or Christmas or Mother's, Father's Day, the big Sundays of the year. At the opening of the message, we'll often tell guys, hey, a lot of you, I know you walking into church, it's like a man walking into Victoria's Secret to buy something for his wife in the middle of the week when she's not with him. He walks in feeling guilty for no reason, looking around like people are judging me. I don't feel comfortable here, but I'm still kind of drawn here. And we use that analogy to help understand that if you want to reach new guys, when they show up at church, they come with that same, they're pre-intimidated walking in because they're covering things up. They think the guys around them are better off, or you know, the enemy's telling them you're worse than them. You're a pervert. You're a blah, 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 whatever. And so trying to start with dispelling some of those things and saying, hey, you might be new here. You may not be sure what you believe about God. That's cool. You're welcome here. We want you to be a part of this group no matter what. And then over time, their beliefs will start to line up with the brotherhood that they're a part of. But if you don't start with the right guys to start that band of brothers, you're going to just reach only church guys.
Amen. I want to move to cultivating a healthy masculine culture, because I think culture is the huge piece, and our culture is defining masculinity for our men and defining what a man is. All of these things are shifts and different things that are moving. I want you guys to speak to biblical masculinity versus the stereotypes that most of our guys are actually adopting. And for not because they, much like me, I didn't have any other models. Right. So then you could call it toxic masculinity, you call it whatever you want to call it, but I didn't have any other models. So what did I go to? I went to the streets, I went to my coaches, I went to the men that were prominent in my life. And for me, I was an African American growing up with all of the trappings of all that the social ills of my culture. And so the men in my family had three or four women with four or five different babies from different ones. So that was masculinity. I had people that were drug dealers and really strong, respected people on the streets. So I'm like, oh, that must be what a man is, because I didn't know. Then I had guys in the locker room telling me what they thought a man was. So all of these different streams of thought, and then the culture is moving. And then the church has to define biblical masculinity. And that doesn't look like, oh, we eat meat, because then not every guy is that guy. Not every guy wants to go out and shoot and fish and hunt and do all the stuff. We've got guys in our church that read, that are very thoughtful, that are gamers. What will you do with the gamers in your church? If masculinity in your church is about hunting and fishing and shooting, then you're going to miss a chunk of men who have nothing to do with that stuff. Right? Somebody said that because they're one of those guys. It's like, my man, there you go. And I knew we'd have some in the room that's like kind of sitting here like, okay, we're in a men's meeting. So here it is, gorillas walking around the midst. No, there's a spectrum here, and we've got to be sensitive to that. Would you guys speak to this for our guys here and ladies today about the cultural shifts and different things in masculinity and what we need to do to address it?
Jeff, you go.
By the way, if this was happening around a table, there would be no pauses. There would be all these interruptions that happen between three guys that love and respect each other. Like what Keith spoke to, when we have to define masculinity, it can't be in reaction to the culture either way. I think about the struggles that we see that happens in Jesus's own disciples. One of my favorite conversations is when they're talking about, like, who gets to be in charge, right? Who gets to be co-captains? Who gets to be vice president of Jesus's new kingdom? And I love this idea that Jesus said, whoever wants to be great among you must be your servant. And there's a couple things that I really love to impart to men, especially to the young athletes that I get to be a part of. You need to understand that if in Imago Dei, if you've been created in the image of God, you have greatness embedded into you. And the desire to be great, and the desire to do great things, the desire to do good and to be good, that is part of who you have been designed to be. But he said that the way that that comes out is different from the way that the culture wants to define greatness. He says, whoever wants to be great among you must be your servant. Must be your servant. And I love the statements that Jesus makes, especially these missional kind of statements, right? I came to seek and save those who are lost. But my favorite one is Mark 10:45. For I didn't come to be served, but to and to give my life. I personally think in that context, well, there is an application that is true for the entire church. The fact that he was speaking it in a room full of men help to redefine their lives for them.
That's good, Jeff.
And that there is really something good about like creating a vision of manhood that is about sacrifice and servanthood. Those are the male cultures that we create that have the most loyalty are the ones that require the most sacrifice and selflessness.
That's true.
One of the great guys in my church, when he became a grandpa, he goes, I finally, this is a gentleman, he wouldn't mind me telling this, he had a very successful career in the IT business, lost his career, bankruptcy, multiple affairs, tries to restore his family, on his third family, and he's raising his grandkids. He goes, I finally figured it out that my life has the most meaning when it's not about me. And so, and I love how Jesus does, he redefines everything for us. I love rituals and traditions. And Jesus putting the towel on, sorry, I know this is not a preaching convention.
Yeah.
Right, with yeah. preachers Go ahead, in the
sit
room.
Sit back down.
With preachers in the room. But he went, when the disciples came, he put the towel around their waist, right, around his waist, wash their feet. But what do you think happened every time they went to somebody else's house and they saw the bowl and the towel?
That's good.
They're like, where's the towel? Okay, come on, right? Because they were reminded in a very practical way. And Jesus redefined what success would look like in their life and how to live missionally.
Good. Jay, go for it.
Yeah, so well said. In the end, that's what men really want. This is why most guys, the number one way they're going to get connected into discipleship is by them being given a job. It's way more comfortable for a man to show up to volunteer and serve. Like, you can just create campus cleanup days even if you don't need them.
That's right.
Because that's when guys will show up. I'll bring my tool. I'll bring the, you know, and they want to bring their stuff. They want to bring the little toys. They want to pitch in. They want to work. And Jeff, it's exactly what you said. They're hardwired by God to want sacrifice and service and duty.
Yes.
So the brotherhood can't just be about bacon and, you know, fun. And those fun things are good, but whenever we're there, we're calling them higher because that's how God hardwired them. Jeff, that was a really good point.
It's the trick, calling them. I mean, the thing that changed my life, literally changed my life, was this. The few, the proud, the Marines. I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do with my life. I don't know if, and literally I had a colonel in my ROTC unit at in high school that I went to, and I said, I was a senior, and I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not ready. I didn't have anybody aiming me academically at that time. So I'm like, what do I do? I want to be a Marine. I think I want to be a Marine. He looks at me, literally, and he does this. You're kind of scrawny, but we'll see about it. And he takes me down to the recruiter, because what was in me? I wanted to live and die for some great cause. I needed a cause. I needed an adventure. I needed some. If you're going to have a strategy for your men that's like this, come eat and come be vulnerable and share your heart. That's not what we do. That's not how we look at you. You're laughing because that's the strategy. Get them in a group so they can talk about their feelings. That's not how you do it. You want a guy to talk about his feelings? Go out and do some work. And as you're working, go out and hike, go out and shoot, go out and do something And while you're doing it, guess what's going to happen? Yeah, you know, my son is blah, 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 blah. We're walking along up the river, or we're shooting, I'm reloading, and we're talking, but life is happening. Ministry, discipleship, mentorship is happening. Now, do I ultimately want to be able to have coffee and, you know, accountability groups? Yes. That's not the first. You can't clean the fish and cook it and eat it in the same moment. So some of these strategies that we're talking
about. We say all the time that women communicate like knee to knee, right? Men are shoulder to shoulder, right? You do not want to look another guy in the eye, right, while you're processing some
really?
Stuff
I want
like
to
that.
Look into your eyes.
Doesn't remind work. Reminds me that you still need some of these. Okay. So, and creating those kind of opportunities is what's really important because,
you do this better than anybody I know. Really, and I mean that, brother. This idea of adventure-based retreats, service projects, challenges, adventure, can you speak to how that just captures a guy's heart and what that does and how we can hijack or actually hijack those vehicles and wiring for the gospel?
Yeah. Our leadership team is fully comfortable with bait and switch. We do want them. We want them to become vulnerable.
Yes.
And honestly, we want them crying, and we want them hugging each other, and we want them letting people in. But it's just not where they start, Jeff. What you said, you know, shoulder to shoulder. And so, most guys, if you ask them to come to a meeting, a lot of them it's going to be a no right off the bat, especially because they're nervous. But if you're like, can you come help us do this thing, whatever that thing is. Then there's a sense of duty. They're like, oh, yeah, for sure. I'd love to help out. And then along the way. So, and I think you guys also talked about not just pigeonholing Keith, like one type. You know, when we first wrote our Anchorman curriculum, Keith and I were just becoming friends and we just finished this book. And I realized it was all very narrow. It was narrow, white, wealthy, you know, very focused on outdoorsy, REI kind of a thing. And that was okay for maybe a majority of the demographic where our church is. But after getting to know Keith and sharing life together and talking, I was like, man, we got to go. So we went back and changed a lot of the stuff. Every time we do an event or anything, we're always thinking about the guys who don't like sports. We're thinking about older men. Older men don't want to run through an obstacle course. You know what I mean? And so we just always want to think through options for them so that everyone can have a sense of purpose. Yeah. When they're there, but it's just what you say, Keith, once they're shoulder to shoulder, whether they're on a hiking trail, a trail run, whether they're golfing, whether they're cleaning up something or doing it for us, going on a mission trip to build houses in Tijuana, all the things. And then along the way, the walls start to come down and God does the most miraculous stuff when they're partnering to get some kind of adventure or work done.
I'm going to just say this and you just had to, if you don't know me. But I'm telling you, I love you, I care about you, and I want you to understand all my white brothers and sisters in here. Most of the curriculum and materials are not aimed at people of color. When I look at Wild at Heart, I read that stuff, I'm like, that's great stuff. But the vast majority of people that look like me could care less about all your hiking, adventuring kind of thing. We didn't do any of that. We don't grow up that way. And so 99% of men's curriculums are not aimed at people of color. So if you have people of color or you want them, you better be conscious of those kind of things because, like, for instance, tried to use the pure desire stuff in the urban context of L.A. It did not work. All of the material was a military ethos base because that's where Ted came from. And all of the illustrations, analogies, metaphors, everything were completely, no one in the urban context got it. They were only, finally somebody said, we don't understand. And I said, how many of you in the room don't? It was 50 of them. All of them said, we don't get it. And I'm like, I called Pure Desire, called Jay. I was like, listen, if you guys intend to reach men that don't look like you, we're going to have a different strategy. We have different language because there are things that strike my heart that are different. Like, for instance, in worship here at Connection, I can get into it. I can accommodate myself to it, but it's not my heart's music. You get white guy in a guitar at a retreat, and that's all you got, and you got people of other ethnicities there, and you didn't think through your worship curriculum, you're basically saying you didn't put anything on the table for me to eat. Now, here's the deal. When I come to your house, the first thing you're going to do is ask, hey, what do you eat? What kind of things do you eat? You're not going to make the whole meal around me, but you do want to put something on the table, hospitality-wise, that says, you thought about me coming to your house, and you put this on the table. What are you putting on the table for your men's ministry for men of different ethnicities? Just like you're saying, different socioeconomic backgrounds, we have to think through these things because it matters.
Jason, yeah, getting a team of leaders that have a single young single guy, you know, probably either still in high school or just in college years, he's going to be the one that goes, you guys, all you talk about is being a dad or being married, and that's not me yet, you know? So getting some variety, like our leadership team has cultural diversity, socioeconomic diversity, and age stage of life. We got two grandpa age guys. I'm a third, so I guess three grandpas now in there. And then all the way down to some high school guys. And you just want that mix because they're going to help when you think through an event, when you think through just the whole strategy that you're using to reach men. You want to, I love that analogy, Keith. You want something at the table. Yep. It might be a side dish. It may not be the main thing. I think your main dish is probably like the culture, the context that God has placed you in and your church in. But you don't want to just reach one type of man. You want to have something there on the table for everybody.
I want to shift tracks and wrap up a little bit so we can talk in the room a little bit, because I think there's some conversation that would be robust. I'm always thoughtful of the fact that the person at the front of the room is not smarter than the collective room. So there's wisdom within the room that we need to make room for. But I do want to move into this idea of the power of mentorship and putting men to men and trying to figure out how to move them, have examples and models, that type of thing. We're talking about a brotherhood. So there's fathers, there's uncles, there's sons. There's this idea that we have this vast brotherhood that can be a surrogate in a lot of ways. For me, I can tell you, coming to church and having older men to look at. Like, I had two daughters right away. I was a Marine. I did not know what to do with little girls. I mean, I literally would come home and like, hey, what's going on? Blah, blah. Somebody'd start crying. I'm like, hey. Like, I'm like, Mom, he's yelling. I'm not yelling. I'm just a guy. I'm loud, you know. I didn't know how to do their hair, all this stuff. So there was mentorship that was offered. There was exampleship that was offered. I didn't have it growing up. It wasn't present in my family growing up. I had the streets, I told you. And so this idea of having good models, mentors, coaches, however you want to say that, I think speak to that for our guys and our ladies here.
I'm on the field every day. I always kind of joke with my wife that I got demoted to senior pastor from youth ministry. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk even in our language about like next generation, the next generation. Just so you remember, in 1990, I was the next generation. Right. And I've heard this, and this has been my family for my entire life. So I've heard this cycle every decade. And so I'm in it with young men and young women all of the time. And one of the reasons why I became a coach is because I knew that next to dad, coach is one of the most important mentors, influences in their life. And here's what's happening, is that we're starting to see a desire among young adults. In fact, Barna, again, another research, that for those people born in the last half of the 90s and the early part of the 2000s, those young men are coming back we had it mentioned, they're coming back to the church in greater numbers, but they're coming with an expectation of mentorship. But they, because of the social media influence, don't understand mentorship. They don't understand what it is. They want to be wanted. They want to be seen, but they want to do it on their terms, right? And most of us grew up in an apprentice model where you as the apprentice adapted to whatever the mentor was doing, right? And so helping young adults begin to have a context for those kind of things and creating relationships. But also, I think that it's important. I know that this is true in the young people that I get to invest into, is defining the expectations. This is not just a one-way thing. I actually told, forgive the terminology, I got nothing to lose. I actually told one of my 20-something young men, I go, he calls me up and I said, so what is this, another spiritual booty call? Right? You just call me up when you think that there's something that needs to happen or something that needs to change in the life, and then the next morning you ditch me, right? We don't talk again for another 4 months. That's not what a relationship is like. And these types of things, because that's where we start getting into the nitty, that's where we start getting into the nitty gritty of these types of these types of relationship. They're coming with an expectation. They're coming with an expectation to have their leadership developed. They're coming with an expectation to be poured into. What they don't have an expectation is that they need to invest as much back, even if it's just time.
Yeah. Yeah. Jay?
I'm going to go like a slightly different direction on this about mentorship, but this is something that we've been learning from our younger guys, our 20-something pastors at the church. A lot of young men are getting mentored by social media influencers, and they'll have some type of a program or a challenge. The word shred is used quite a bit too, is what we're talking about, where it's like you start the new year and it's like there's a physical component, a workout component, a diet component, a reading component, and young men are getting mentored. And by some of them, really actually harmful is social media influencers. Now, I'm not talking about Christians. And so we're exploring this year doing a couple of like Anchored Man is our men strategy, doing some Anchored Man shreds where you get a group of young men. And the discipleship is focused on this challenge. But it will build the relationship along the way. Because just saying, well, I'm going to have this guy meet up with this guy and they're going to mentor each other. A lot of, for the younger guys, they want to have like some type of, they need almost more simplicity and more structure to that mentoring. So whether they're going through a book or whatever, but we're going to be launching in the fall, like, hey, here's a, it's like 75 hard or whatever, you know, we're going to do like a 60-day shred where like you commit to, you know, you don't look at porn for these 60 days. You read a chapter of the Bible, you know, cut out sugar, alcohol, you know, and they love these challenges. Dude. So that's something we're exploring right now that's new for us, but it's not new in the world.
I love that because there's a quote that I came across just this week that said, men need apprenticeship into mature adulthood, but we're seeking out sound bites from men on stages rather than in embodied relationships, in men whose scars are visible, whose vulnerability is palpable, and whose strength emerges from weakness. And these challenges that Jason is talking about, like, we have finally figured this out, that ministry is all about creating excuses and reasons to get people together. Go ahead. Yeah, Jay?
No, he said,
I just said,
He's
totally
affirming you, brother.
Yeah, it's, and so these kinds of things, if that's what is out there motivating this kind of next generation, creating those types of opportunities, all it is just another context to be able to create relationships and a context for them to start understanding, doing some life shoulder to shoulder so that eventually they can be face to face.
All right, I'm going to turn it over to the room for some Q&A, comments, questions. Yeah, lady. Come on, stand up. Tell me your name.
Hi, I'm Jen.
Hey, Jen.
I pastor a church in St. Louis, Missouri.
Come on.
And, so on my leadership team, actually, I have a lot of guys, which I'm incredibly grateful for, that we have both men and women leading from the platform. But one of the trends I've noticed since I stepped into, like, leading our church is some hesitancy on their part. Like, there's always, like, a sense of waiting for permission. Mm-hmm. Like,
okay. Like a hesitancy to take like initiative and step out. Yeah, I think part of, and I'll just speak to some of this a little bit, and I'd love for all of you to chime in. I think you got to remember the cultural moment we're in. You remember Me Too, we're on the backdrops of that. A lot of times men hear when women say things like, we're not safe, and it's not safe in this environment. So we've got a lot of thought processes that we have to go through in order to even walk with you. Does that make sense? And so the more that you can make it safe for them, you know, we're always trying to make it safe for ladies. You have to sort of get into their world and sort of make it safe and challenge him to just, because men naturally will take initiative, but what he's trying to do, and I think maybe overcompensating, is he doesn't want to usurp you.
Yeah.
Correct. He doesn't in any way want to come near making you feel like he's trying to overstep. And the way that you can do that is just being real comfortable in your skin with them and just saying, man, be a man. I'm going to be a woman. I want you to be fully man, and we can walk together.
One of the concepts in Christian leadership is this idea of submission, right? The Greek word hupotasso. And it's often used in lines of authority and authority structure. Mm-hmm. But one of the most beautiful applications of this is actually outside of the biblical text, but in the cultural use of that Greek word that is often also used to describe a puzzle piece that has been cut to fit exactly in its place. And when it is placed there, it hupotassos to the other pieces that are around. So when we help people understand and become secure in their call and their identity, then they know that submission is not just only about lines of authorities, but that God has placed you here and cut you and made you for this.
That's
and
good.
We need you to be this.
Fully that.
It's also the way in which melody and harmony work together. They hupotasso one another. And so finding those kind of complementary ideas that go beyond just authority line structures, but into the feeling of the way that the kingdom operates. Yeah.
Jay, you want to chime in? Anybody else? Next question. What's your name?
I'm Neil from Ogden, Utah. I lead a men's ministry. I wanted to hear from you guys about inspiring them. You talked a little bit about strategy. You talked a little bit about maybe vision, mission, establishing that sort of thing. What I'm finding the biggest challenge is that sometimes we have to drive men kicking and screaming at some of these events and like ask their wife, hey, sign them up, go in the app. It's like pulling teeth to get them to participate.
Yeah.
Once they do, right, they love it, they're all engaged, and just inspiring them to like to inspire them inside of them. It's, man.
Yeah.
You see them at these sports events, they like the letters on their belly, they're jumping up for a football game. You ask them to do that for Jesus, it's like,
yeah. Jay, this one was made for you, bro.
Be patient.
Yep.
Aim for the guys that God is that are saying yes. Don't be focused on numbers and who's not there yet. And we always kind of have this thing of at our church of under promise and over deliver. So if a guy shows up and finally gives you his yes. First of all, don't underestimate. Most guys have no interest in doing anything other than going to a church service. The leap from going to a church service to any men's event, whatever it is like one giant step for mankind. It's a really big deal for them. So we hold that with we take it very seriously if a guy shows up at something outside of a church service. And when they do, whoever's there, we want to make sure that we over-deliver. We spend, you might want to say we lose, but we don't lose it. We invest it way more money to get guys to show up to stuff. So when we launched our men's strategy, we wanted to get all these guys to a camp. This was probably like 15 years ago. We charged $69 for a three-day camp, including all their food, t-shirt, games, everything. And the reason we did it is we agreed as a leadership team, the elders of our church, if we want to like get guys, we got to like put some money and invest in it and make it great when they show up.
Yep.
Because when they do show up and they have an awesome time, now you hopefully have this is going to sound horrible to say it this way, but like a customer for life who's going to go tell their friends when you go, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
So we still to this day invest every men's event we do, everything we do. It costs us more than what we bring in. But here's the thing, for the executive pastors in the room or the operations or finance guys in the room, if you get a woman at church, you get a tithe off of the grocery budget at best. But when you get a guy to show up and he becomes a fully committed follower of Jesus, eventually he starts tithing to that church. And we look at that as a way of sponsoring the next guys who don't yet come to church for stuff, you know? And so we really hold it sacredly. When they show up, we want to wow them and surprise them with something they didn't think would happen. And so we get pretty out there with like collecting ideas from
men in our church, where do you think a guy shows up he would love? When men show up, they don't want to sit in a room for a long time. They don't want to just not be knee to knee. They don't want to sit in a room and listen to people talk. So our men's events are almost always mostly outdoors. There is a spiritual component, but it's compact. And we'll get, you know, maybe 40 minutes, 50 minutes inside where there's like a few songs of worship and a message. But most of it is outdoors around fire pits.
Yep.
It's activity groups going out and doing things during the daytime. And that's why being a missionary and really understanding your culture is important.
Yep.
But focus on the guys you do have and let it build over time. We started our Anchorman boot camp with like, I think 8 or 9 guys the first time. But we poured into them, we discipled them, and then over time we ended up having, we process between 200 and 300 men going through this boot camp every year at our church. But it started with 8. So don't despise small beginnings. Focus on the guys that God has put in front of you, and then the scale will happen as right. word spreads that you guys do a good job of discipling
this,
men.
Let me say this. I'm not saying this about your event, but I am going to say this in general about church events. They're just horrible. They're just horrible for men. They were designed by church guys sitting around a table who've been in church forever. And just like Jason is saying, there were no young guys at that table. There were no fringe guys at that table. All of those decisions were made by committed Christians. So guess what the event is? It's for committed Christians. When I go to Jason's event, I like literally, there's no place like that. You ought to, the next time they do a men's event and you can get to it, you ought to just go. Because you get out there and you find out, and it's just like what he said, there's people moving, there's activities, there's all of this stuff that is not come sit and listen to preachers all day. I thought the first year when I went to Firefest, I thought, oh, they're going to have breakouts. Nope, no breakouts. There was activities. Guys were going surfing, guys were going hiking, guys were going biking, guys were doing stuff all afternoon, and there was a night session. And guess what? They had a blast and all came back. Like when you say inspired, the question you'd have to ask is, do I have the right bait? Because the last time I checked, fish, that when you go fishing, if you get the right bait, you'll get fish. The question is have I exegeted my community well? As a missionary, do I understand the psyche, the language, the glossary of terms, the activity, the hopes, the dreams, the aspirations of the men in my community? Because you're not just, so the idea, I remember Dave Veet saying this to me. The men that are in your church are not all of the men that you can have. You have a vast field of men in your community, but we're only designing ministry for the ones that are already in the boat.
Yeah. Telling the stories. It was part of our note, but finding the guys, I did actually get to go on one of Jay's Anchored Man trips just as a ministry partner. And the best thing about it is, like, once you have a win and a guy has experienced that, you got to tell that story over and over and over again, right?
Yeah.
But let's be honest. Like, why don't guys go to stuff? I will tell the kind of the dirty secret. I was not planning on coming to convention this year. I hadn't been since Anaheim. Once I stopped having to be required to be at convention from being on the board or something like that, then you start making value judgments. And I wasn't thinking about going until my friend Greg Johnson called me up and said, hey, Jeff, I'm getting a thing. I'd really love for some of the people that I've been doing ministry with for a long time to be there. Are you going to be at convention? Now all of a sudden convention was on my radar, right? Oh, yeah, I'd probably need to come. And then I'm in the middle of a whole new personal project that was consuming my time. I was not ready to come. And then I get a call. Hey, we want to do this. Would you be willing to participate? I'm like, man, I got to register for convention. I got to make a hotel reservation, book a flight. And it has been so rewarding to be back to reconnect with so many people that I don't get.
Amen.
When we start to, guys don't want to do stuff because it means that they're having to not do something else. So
what's
it better be worth the replacement.
Right.
When Jay's guys come, our culture is guys are not in church. They're not at our religious facility because their church is club soccer or club baseball on Sunday mornings.
That's right.
Right? So for them to come to something means that they're saying no to something else, and it better be worth that transaction.
That's right.
Because there are plenty of times I'd rather just – I mean, how many of you as pastors just said on a Sunday morning, I love Jesus, but I wish I didn't get to go have to go to church today.
That, you can't say that.
And hey, I was the best church attendee during COVID.
Good.
Because I could watch it on TV. Be like, the preacher was really good, and I'm in my robe, and I would go for a hike with my daughter. Make it worth their while. And tell the stories of the guys who it has impacted.
Who else? Right there. Go ahead, brother. Yeah, I'm sorry. What's your name? Go for it. I have thoughts. Jay?
I didn't hear the whole question, but it sounded like one I don't want to touch. No, I'm kidding. I heard a little bit of it. By the way, hi, Jim. I see you in the front row. I think that's Jim Duran right there. We were there. You, hey, buddy. We were just in Ventura until this morning. We drove out. But I think what I heard is say something about Gen Z being more attracted to like tradition, mainline kind of stuff. All I would say is like, yes, Barna is helpful, but who's in your church? If you have some Gen Z in the church, talk to them, ask them. Our Gen Z in our church, I think, are more interested in political conservatism and traditional like cultural manhood. Not so much, and maybe it's just because we're not a very like traditional type of church service. So I don't feel like we're going to go change the style of our church to reach somebody who really wants to be a part of a Greek Orthodox or whatever. It's like, go do that. That's rad. If that's what you're into, you know, you got to have to pick who you're going to be as a church. So I don't know if I heard the question right, but that's probably the best I would say.
I think you're right in the sense. And here's the deal. Like, we've got to become much more adept sociologists. We've got to understand the movements and the thoughts and the psychology of the people we're reaching, which is why at the beginning of the conversation, we talked about being missionaries and understanding your target audience and the people you're trying to reach. And you might be in a context that doesn't have a lot of Gen Z. I can tell you, when you have Gen Z, you better bring it straight, no chaser. They don't necessarily want the haze and the lights and all of that stuff. They want real substance right now. They've had all of that stuff. You don't need hyper-produced. You don't need digital screens and all that stuff. It's great if you have it. But really, what they want is solid truth.
And it's not just biblical truth. We're finding that pushing young adults towards maybe some of the discipleship tools that we've used in the past. They want to know, is the person that's sitting in front of me real?
Yes.
And will they talk about real issues? And when we show a level of authenticity and vulnerability and then point them to the truth, this is how I was able to navigate this, because there are principles that come from the Word of God.
Yeah.
Remember, truth is a relationship. Jesus said, I am the way, the truth. Truth is a relationship. And it's not just correct information. Pointing them to the truth. This is me. This is Jesus. Yeah. Let's go.
Let's take a minute after you and me, okay? Who else? Sorry. Somebody back here. I'm sorry. They had their hands up. Yeah, go ahead, brother.
We do a lot of that stuff with a hidden population. I have the privilege of running a camp in partnership with Prison Fellowship, and for kids who have a parent that's incarcerated. So our excuse for getting them together is by just teaching them practical skills. Right? Here's how to take apart your bike. Here's how to use a power saw. Here's, it goes back to the Jason idea, the Keith idea of shoulder to shoulder, right? And building a relationship, because I think it goes back to some of my personal convictions on what we do, that our job is to pass on our values and our skills to the next generation.
But specifically, your question was around boundaries. And so here... Right. Yeah, so for me, because of maybe how God wired me, I don't know what it is. I pick up strays everywhere I go. And so the first thing that I need to do is clarify expectations.
Yes.
Clearly. I am not your father. I am not that. I legitimately will tell somebody in the first appointment, this is what this is. And because you can re-traumatize them,
yes,
because they have an expectation, whether you communicate it or not, they have an expectation that I found my father.
Oh, that's good.
I found him. There he is. Now, and the reason I know that is because I spent my young adult life looking for him.
Yes.
And every mentor I got ended up failing me at a certain point, not because they didn't do what they were supposed to do, but because I had an expectation that was not communicated nor agreed upon, and that relationship became strained. So it's important and incumbent upon us to establish that playing field right out of the gate. Here's who I'm going to be. Here's how I will show up. And that's that. And I think that's a big piece of protecting your relationship with that person so that they are not, because you don't know the hidden unconscious things that are going on in their soul as they're thinking about their relationship with you. And the only way that you can
mind
that
up
is to be clear up front. And the reason I know that is because I got hurt because of my own rejection abandonment issues, and I superimposed things on someone. Mm-hmm. And I've been in ministry and did not clarify those expectations. Yes. And people see you at places like this or wherever they see you and think, I want that. I want him to be my mentor. And really what they're saying is, I want him to be my father. There's something in him as a man or as a woman. You see it, and I want that. And so the clear communication, clear as kind, right? There you go. Other question. There you go.
Ooh, I love this one. They schedule on Sunday, whether it be sports or whatever.
Yeah, go for it.
I don't have no.
Did you send that to me?
For that,
I think one of you.
That's a general challenge, especially in the areas where Jason and I live. Jay, how do you address that?
Sports taking over people's life. They don't come to church. How do you reach them?
This is going to sound really mean, but like I just focus on who's there. And who the Lord has brought to us. If somebody is choosing to go play sports rather than come to church like a young person, if I know them, I would challenge them on that. What's most important in your life? But casting your pearls before swine, like if somebody doesn't want to come, and you can't force somebody to want it. I'm sure all of us as pastors have had somebody call and say, like a mom of a college age kid, can you call my son and invite him to this men's event or to church? I'm like, no, you know, like they have to want it. You can't help somebody who doesn't want it. So that sounds kind of mean, but that's. Otherwise, you'll spend your whole time chasing people who are running the other direction.
I can't chase everybody. I'm not going to chase everybody. I'm going to minister to the people that are in front of me, and I will reach through them to their influence. So I'm not at every soccer game, but if one of my guys goes, I'm there. Because I'm equipping him in such a way that he's going to reach out, share his snacks, his whatever he's doing at that particular event, and that will be the bait that ends up. He'll be the extension of the church. I can't reach everybody, but here's what I do. I work out. I'm at the gym. So guess what? That's my harvest field. So I've got people that I reach far from God myself, but as far as how we can reach into all of these interest groups, you have to reach through your people. I think that's what keeps our churches small, because you feel like you've got to do it yourself. You've got to reach. No. You reach through your people. You equip them for the work of the ministry there. Does that make sense? Next one. Who's got that? Go ahead, brother. I'll get you next back here with your hand up with the haircut like mine.
I like that you were talking about integrating with these men's events. Yes, guys that like shooting, guys that like high school. And also guys that like games.
Right. Go for it. Go for it.
I think events, I think of the one big event in the New Testament. Jesus is teaching and he sees a boat and he goes, hey, can I borrow your boat? He pushes out, he teaches the multitude, and after he's done with the boat, he says, hey, throw your net on the other side. Jesus helps Peter pull the nets in. When he gets on the shore, he says, follow me. There's got to be a follow me element that, comes up after these kind of events.
Right. It's 11:15. You guys need to go. I'm sorry. You could come down and we'll talk together.
Hey, as you leave, anybody here pastors a church under 150 people, I got a gift for you. It's a new resource that just came out. I'll give you two copies. You got to take a guy through it. I was looking for a touch point for men in the country. It's called Dad Academy. It helps men divide a business plan for being a dad. If you pastor a church under 150, come up and see me, please. And we got copies for you.